I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, welcome along to Writer's Routine. This week, we're chatting to Chloe James. Her new book is Love in Lockdown. It's all about Jack and Sophia, who fall in love from their balconies. Now, we talk about writing someone else's idea and how you figure that out and do what they want, but also own it and put your own stamp on it. Also, when you've got such a timely story to write, Love in Lockdown, how does the need to get it out quickly and to be the first, how does that affect the way that you work? And we chat about how this last year has helped her realise that her writing time is exactly that. It's her writing time.
We all need to practice self-care, and I hope that's something that's come out of 2020. We're all trying to work, aren't we, on mental health, and it's not selfish to look after yourself. And actually, as a mum or anybody in this world, we need to look after ourselves. But you can sometimes feel a bit selfish, you know, I shouldn't be doing this. But actually, I also read that if you want to be taken seriously as a writer, you have to take your writing seriously. And that's one of the best quotes I've heard, because I suddenly thought, yeah, you know, everyone before thought, oh, you know, mum can come out because she's just writing. But then I began to make it a bit more serious. And I said, actually, no, this is my job now, everybody. You know, if I'm writing, unless the house is on fire or something urgent, for that hour, I'm writing.
There is more with Chloe James in this week's Writer's Routine. Yes. All right then. How's it going? Welcome along. My name's Dan Simpson. This is Writer's Routine, where we have a look inside an author's working day to see how they plan it, to get the words down and to get it out there. It felt good to be back in a bookshop this week, didn't it? If you're in the UK, some of the lockdown restrictions have lifted, very timely for the book we're talking about this week. And while all the fuss on the telly has been about gyms and about pubs reopening, bookshops were back as well. And I think we kind of took for granted just how personal the bookshop experience is. It felt good to be back, didn't it, if you managed it? This week on Writer's Routine, it's Chloe James, and it gets a little bit Inception-y. You see, it's her debut as Chloe, and it comes not long after her actual debut under her real name, which is Fiona Woodyfield, which was the Jane Austen dating agency. We talk about how that happened, why the switch of names, and also why it's given her the bug for it, why she wants to switch more in the future for different genres. Also, I can't imagine how hard this book must have been to write. You know, Love in Lockdown, the clue's in the name. She was given the idea from a publisher who sought her out to write it. But, I mean, the pressure to get it done and to be the first to get this type of story out, it must have been huge. Chloe talks all about that. We also discuss how writing has helped her regain her identity, because no writing day really is ever ideal with a busy family life going on. You can hear all about the music that she listens to when she writes. There are some very nice recommendations in there, but also why sometimes silence is key. And we chat about the battle of writing an upbeat love story in a rather bleak lockdown. So it's a busy one. It's a good natter this week with Chloe James. And we start, as we always do, with what she sees around her in the place where she sits down to write.
Oh, well, I'm not going to be too honest because it's a bit messy. But I have a desk, which is not really a desk. It's actually a dressing table. But I fell in love with it. It's a, I feel like you have to engage with your piece of furniture when you're writing. I know it sounds a bit strange, but I have to really love it. And it's an upcycled bit of dressing table. And I sit and have it at the window and I look out onto my street, which doesn't sound that exciting, but I quite like it because I can stare dreamily out the window for inspiration. And I can also see what's going on. I like to be up high when I'm writing. Sounds a bit strange, but I like to be able to see what's going on. And also it's quite isolating when you're writing. It can feel a bit isolating, the life of a writer, because you spend a lot of time, don't you, sort of with your characters and in your head. And so to see the daily life that goes on, you know, you get people go past at the same sort of time. And it's rather lovely, actually, because I've got a little family who live at the end of the road. And I've seen the baby go past on the school run with a big brother. And now she's just started going to school. And it's just really quite sweet. You get this sort of sense of time passing, sense of routine. So yeah, that's what I look out on.
There's a book in that somewhere, isn't there?
I know, I'm sure I'm gonna have to get that somewhere. They might come, and in fact I'm not gonna give any spoilers, but there is one person that walks past who is in one of my books. He sort of inspired me, so I don't even know him, but
let me ask
he just
you
gave me the idea.
Let me ask you about the desk before we move our eyes around the room. Why do you love a desk so much? What is it about it?
Well, it's probably a bit tatty. I think my dad would be critical of it because, you know, he's into his carpentry and stuff. And this is all, you know, the upcycled sort of thing. It's got lovely pine top and then it's painted white and it's got these little jeweled knobs on the drawers, which I know is a very tiny detail, but I like them. And then all around it, I've got hung bits and bobs from my kids, which is really cute. You know, when they make things that some of them are years old, it's probably a bit dusty, actually. I tried to clean it. But, you know, little tissue flowers that they made when they were little. I've got a little bag, actually, that's made out of a sock. One of them's kind of arty. And then I've also got things like I'm a big Jane Austen fan, which you probably know from my first book. But I've got little quotes like, I cannot speak well enough to be unintelligible. That's from Northanger Abbey. I love that quote. And I've got a Punch cartoon with, we like the plot, Miss Austen, but all this effing and blinding will have to go. With this guy sat at a desk and, you know, Jane Austen sat there. I presume it's meant to be Jane Austen in a little Regency outfit. And obviously the publisher's saying, you know, we like the plot, but you're going to have to mind your language, which is a bit ironic. But makes me smile anyway.
If I were to walk into your writing room, would I have any clue as to the story that you're telling? I mean, is there post-it notes places? Have you got little cue cards for inspiration?
Stuff that would be really organised. I do have bits that you probably would get a clue because I have bits of handwritten paper, which I do still like the connectivity of pen to paper. I have trained myself to type straight into the computer. Otherwise, I would never get my books written in time. I think we've all had to go across to that. But I do still like writing notes on bits of paper. So you would see around, and I do like my post-its. You know, when it comes to actually plotting a novel, I do. You'll see rolled up in the corner, I've got an old one for my first novel, The Jane Austen Dating Agency. And it's got, I actually ended up messing around with the chapters a bit. And I really love my post-its because they're really handy. You can, you know, move stuff around, move plot ideas, and it doesn't cause too much mess. And I use old bits of wallpaper, you know, that you can get like samples. And it's quite handy. You can just stick, and then you can play around with them because I'm quite a visual person. So it's quite useful. And also to check that the plot is balanced and, you know, because you can get really bogged down. I find that once I start writing, I can really, it just splurges out. But you need to then step back if you can and try and look and see that the character arcs are working and, you know, everything like that. So I do like my bits of wallpaper, but it's not very tidy.
Is there a logic or a method in how you're using the post-it notes and the notebook when you're scribbling to yourself? I mean, is it different colours for different plot points and characters? Are they?
No, that would be really organised. It depends. I mean, they have to be colours that I like. I do have notebooks which are colour coordinated, and I have a really busy life, to be honest. I've got four daughters and I don't have a very organised time because it depends what gets thrown at me what day. And I do find I carry around a notebook. I have one notebook for each novel. And it has to be the right colour. I know that sounds a bit sad, but it has to have the right theme on it. Like, for example, for the Jane Austen Dating Agency, it's sort of pale blue with pink flowers and pink birds. It's all very pretty. And it has to feel right. And then I carry that everywhere in my bag. And then all those horrible trips you have to do as a parent where you have to hang around at dance schools, or I guess if you've got boys' football pitches, don't like the gender stereotyped here, but you know what I mean. I take it with me. And then it means, because I often find I don't tend to sit at a desk to plot. I just don't ever end up doing that. I tend to get my ideas elsewhere. And so, and that can be quite inconvenient, because it might be when you're driving, or when you're, I am concentrating on the road as well, though, I promise, or when you're sitting outside, you know, a classroom. And I've got an eldest daughter who's autistic, and she was only diagnosed a couple of years ago. She's 19 now, and that made it very difficult to really work or do anything, because she had separation anxiety from me. So I would have to go and sit, the amount of schools I had to sit outside for hours, because she couldn't cope if I went home, she'd need to come out and see me at break and things. So I found that really constructive time to make notes in my book, usually plot notes. Ironically, I tend to do my actual writing at the desk at home. My writing has to be in the house, which is a bit weird. I don't know why that is, but the actual serious business of writing the novel itself needs to be in the house. I might write a paragraph if it's one really good one that comes to me when I'm out, but generally it's plotting. So I might have, and it's not necessarily in order, it'll be just when it comes to me. And this notebook's like my Bible, because it's got everything. I've got them for my, you know, last couple of books, and it's quite interesting to look through and see scattered bits that I've written in different places.
Well, let me talk to me about the what you are writing on your desk. So if it's notepads and stuff, when you might be in the car, little jottings here and there. When you're getting down to the proper writing, is it a laptop? Are you working on Word?
Yeah, straight into laptop. And I do try to write in order and just get started. It's the real starting that's the big one. And I find writing, it's quite odd. I don't know if you've ever done any running. I'm not the most.
I am a runner. I'm.
Oh, you are, yeah, a runner.
You're talking to a runner.
You know what you're doing with this. And you're going to laugh at me now. But when I like running, it's really good stress relief. But whenever I've started running, because I tend to have breaks where I don't, I then find that it takes me a good 3 weeks to be able to run around the block without having to stop, because I'm sad. But you get into that flow after those 3 weeks, and you start being able to run a bit more and a bit more and a bit more. But if you have a break, you then have to start all over again. And I feel writing's the same for me. Once you're writing every day, it's almost, I think it must be a muscle in your brain. It just, like, I don't know actually if you've got muscles in your brain. That's a bit worrying. But anyway, you know what I mean. I'm not a scientist. But I just feel you get into that flow, and there's nothing better than that feeling. You probably feel like that as a runner, where you can really run and it's effortless. And I find that happens with writing. The more you write, the more you can write. Certainly with Love in Lockdown, because literally I only had 2.5 months to write it. And I had no choice but to sit at my desk and write. And at times I did have to plot at my desk, because I just didn't have the luxury of time, you know, to be anywhere else. I just had to say, and also it was lockdown, so I couldn't be dropping people places, or, you know, we had to be in, didn't we? But then ironically, it made me appreciate all those times which I thought were wasted, where I had to wait for people outside classes and I was frustrated I wasn't writing. But, you know, those times are really useful. I hadn't realised that. I found it harder during lockdown because I hadn't got the luxury of that time out wafting about, you know, when I was walking the dog thinking. Because even walking the dog during lockdown, I had to be constantly thinking, we were all thinking, weren't we, about social distancing. You couldn't really drift away into your book. You're sort of thinking, actually, the person's coming around the corner, I might need to walk around them. So I think it's really taught me something this year, that's something I hope that other people might be inspired by, that it's not wasted time when you're having to do other things, that you can still use that. If you carry a notebook or some way of, or maybe you've got a better memory than me, you can just keep those things in your head. And I think that's something to take away for me this year, a real positive, that those are not wasted times. I've always enjoyed reading, and I've been on a few courses where people have said, how much do you all read? And I remember I felt rather guilty at the time when I first started a couple of years ago, and I thought, I'm not reading as much as I should because I haven't got time. I've got books to write. But actually, the lecturer who was talking said, you need to read to be able to write well. All genres, all different types. And she was so right. And now I'm so glad to be able to put it in my planner that I have to read every day. Such a shame. Such a hardship. But I do find reading gets you into the flow of writing. You know, conversely, it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't have to be the same genre. But also the other thing is, I think, be kind to yourself when you're writing for the first time, when you're starting. Just play with it. Try to take that pressure off. I know it's hard when there's a time constraint. Like with Love in Lockdown, I really had to sort of hit the ground running. but generally with a book, I think it's about playing with those ideas. And I find for me personally, I don't know if everyone's like this, but in the mornings, the best time when I'm waking up, because you're almost sort of half asleep, especially at weekends when you don't have to get up and do school runs. But that's when a lot of my ideas come to me, because and I do, again, keep that notebook, keep on about these notebooks by my bed, and then I can hop up and go, ah, that was a really good idea. And I think it takes the pressure off, because I think sometimes, you know, that blank page can be a bit daunting, can't it? And thinking, I've got to write.
How do you make it the blank page on the screen look a little nicer? Recently on the show, I have been awestruck by the amount of font opinions that authors have. And writers do very, very strange, unique things with fonts.
Just to keep... gosh, I feel a bit boring.
Well, I was speaking to someone the other day who edits in a different font just because then it might look a bit different to him.
That's very clever,
or
actually.
If they're kind of struggling midway through and the words aren't coming, maybe they might mix up the font just to kind of keep things fresh. I take it by your surprise that you don't have any staunch font opinions. What do you write in?
No, that's really sad. I don't even know. I think it's Times New Roman that I write in, because I think that's the one you're meant to send everything in, aren't you? So I tend to be a bit sad. I'm like, oh, just keep to that. But I know what you mean. Fonts, they do mean something. Because I was just trying to order myself a planner for next year, and I thought, I'm going to look at the font because it's got to be the right feeling. And it's the first time I actually thought about font and thought, actually, can a font change how you feel about something? But I must admit, I don't play with that on the screen. I'm very businesslike. It's like that page, once that is my work, I sit in my house on my desk, and I treat it very seriously. And it's a bit boring, really, but it's just I write. But if I am having a block like that, I tend to go back to pen and paper. And it's funny, I don't know why, but maybe that's my way of moving that block rather than changing font. I might try the font thing, though. That does sound a good plan.
The show is Writer's Routine, Chloe. So talk us through yours. And it sounds like you have one of the busiest days ever.
I feel a bit bad about the routine thing. Because,
well, it's okay, because it's quite, you don't want to, you know, there's no point in you trying to talk us through an ideal day because it never happens. So just try and run through an average day for you with everything else when you try and fit in slots for you to write.
Yeah, so what I would do is I would get up and do my usual morning routine, which is get the kids out of the house and get them to school. That's when then I can come back, I can try, and I do have to sit and go through my emails because it's procrastination probably, but you never know, there might be something really important and exciting that I have to reply to. And then I do sit down for the nitty-gritty, probably about 9:30 by then, for a couple of hours and really try and write. And that's when computer's out. You know, I will have my notebook out if I need it, but I tend to rely more on just writing. And then obviously I'll take time for lunch. And then I will try and do a good hour after lunch. But the trouble is, they kick the kids out of school so early. It's very annoying. 3:00, it's like, So then I find by that time, I'm losing a good couple of hours because kids come in, you've got help with homework, I've got one doing GCSEs, school stuff needs sorting, washing, masks, etc. And then dinner time, food needs cooking. So I do find then it's the evening by the time I might get another couple of hours in. But I do find that's, you see, it just depends. If I'm having a really good run, I might do a bit more than that each day. But if I'm having a bad few days where I've got medical calls I've got to do, one of my kids is sick, then, I mean, that's the thing about writing. And I think that's the wonderful thing about it. It's such a portable thing. Like I say, you can take your book somewhere and you can write it, but you can also fit it in. I used to think that you couldn't. You know, I used to think, oh, I haven't got time before I started really taking writing seriously. But actually, that 5 minutes you spend on Facebook, not that everybody's on Facebook, or you know what I mean, or just checking your emails or whatever, you can actually get work done. And I find it's really cheered me up. You can do it in spite of children. I'm not making it sound flippant because I know how hard it is, especially when, you know, as I say, I've got two children with major health conditions and it can be really tough to try and write. But the wonderful thing with writing is you can try and fit it around. Like, for example, sometimes I'll have a bad week, but I'll end up spending a lot of the weekend writing. So do you see what I mean? It might not be a routine, but I can fit it in.
Yeah, it's malleable, isn't it? It's very adaptive as work.
Yeah, and that's so empowering. It's so empowering because I felt very down that I couldn't work properly because, you know, every time I tried to, at one point, I was going back to work and I had to drop my job because both of my kids were ill at the same time. One of them actually developed epilepsy. And I just felt so dispirited. And then I thought, no, this is the time for me. I've always wanted to write. I'm going to take this seriously. I can take my books with me. You can even take them to hospital if necessary and sit outside that appointment. And it's so enabling to be able to do that. It's so empowering because I feel, for me, my writing has become a way I've regained my identity. And I know that sounds a bit melodramatic, but I did feel, as a carer, you can feel a little bit, especially as a mum, it's a wonderful thing, but you can give up yourself and your own personality in a way, trying to do what you need to do and try to be everything to everybody. And writing's enabled me to really try and claw that back, which is a wonderful thing.
I'd imagine it's about control as well, isn't it? It's if you've got two daughters who are ill, one recently very surprised out of nowhere, develops an illness, and you're running all over the place, and just being able to sit there and think, right, this is my time. I will do with it what I want. I can control the characters on the page.
It is, and it's allowing yourself to be a little bit, dare I say it, selfish, because it's not selfish. You know, we all need to practice self-care, and I hope that's something that's come out of 2020. We're all trying to work on your mental health, and it's not selfish to look after yourself. And actually, as a mum or anybody in this world, we need to look after ourselves. But you can sometimes feel a bit selfish, you know, I shouldn't be doing this. But actually, I also read that if you want to be taken seriously as a writer, you have to take your writing seriously. And that's one of the best quotes I've heard, because I suddenly thought, yeah, you know, everyone before thought, oh, you know, mum can come out because she's just writing. But then I began to make it a bit more serious. And I said, actually, no, this is my job now, everybody. You know, if I'm writing, unless the house is on fire or something urgent, for that hour I'm writing, so please don't disturb me. And they've got really good at actually accepting that, and I've found that they have respected my writing since I've respected it, if that makes sense.
It absolutely does. If this time is quite precious, and especially with love in lockdown, where you needed to get this done in a timely manner, those slots of writing that you have every day, the 3 hours or so, how planned through is it? How much do you know about what you want to get done in that time?
Well, I do have a planner, and I try not to be too tight, because I think that sets I feel like I'm setting myself up to fail. Does that make sense? And I'm very precious about that with the things that can suddenly throw up. I might find my eldest daughter, she's not now living with us, she's in assisted care, but you know, she might be having a mental health crisis. She did a couple of weeks ago, and I've got to rush off and deal with that. So I try not, I know a lot of writers do specific blocks, don't they, of word count. But that I feel would be setting myself up to fail. But I do give myself a much more fluid number, so I might put for the week, actually I need to get another, I don't know, 3,000 words done, and that means if something goes wrong on one day, I can try and catch up another. Do you see what I mean? I try to give those sort of boundaries so that I stick to a plan. I mean, with Love in Lockdown, it was absolutely, I just had to write. it was an amazing thing. It was a little bit daunting actually, but I just had to write most of the day to get it done in 2.5 months. I've never written a book so fast. And there's no question, if you're writing that quickly, you've got to spend hours at the desk. And my husband actually had to cook a couple of times, which was actually, I found out he can.
The miracle of 2020.
Yeah, it's a bit worrying actually, because now he's like, oh darn, I think he's let it slip that he can actually cook and present it very nicely, and he can do a vegan dinner as well for my vegan daughter, so it's like he's got a job now.
I'm curious about the, you know, cracking out a book in 2.5 months thing. I think we'll come to that in just a sec. This time that you've got every day, if it is precise, especially when you're writing in 2.5 months where you need to absolutely crack through the words, how precise are those words? How good are you at getting everything done almost in a neat package in the first draft? Or are you pretty happy to overwrite and you'll just curate later?
I'm a bit OCD. I will go over it and over and over it. And I know some people say you shouldn't edit as you go along, but I am a bit of an editor as I go along. It doesn't have to be perfect. And I think that's how I get beyond that perfectionist attitude, you know, that you must get it. And I think that's why some people get blocked. I'm afraid I am able to just spill straight on the page. But what I do each time I go back, even if it's later that afternoon, certainly the next day, I will often read over the last bit that I've done. And I know some people say, oh, you shouldn't do that. But it seems to work for me, partly, if nothing else, just to get back into the flow of words and into that world. Because, you've been off, I don't know, dealing with phone calls, talking to hospitals, dealing with kids' problems. You need to get back in that world. So for me, it works very well to just read back over what I've just written. I don't see it as a waste of time at all. I know some people think you should just write and then just put the pen down or stop writing and then go back and carry on the next day. But for me, it works much better to go over it. And I do a bit of light editing while I'm doing that. I just have to be careful I don't keep doing it because, you know, you could get stuck on that last bit. But I find that's not too much of a problem. And then I will go back at the end of the dirty first draft and really edit it, you know, because the first draft is really the messy first draft. Even with a QuickBook that I had to do, you know, it still had a lot missing.
How, if things aren't kind of going your way, if the words aren't coming out that easily, is there anything else that you do that really just helps you through the work every day? Like a coffee at a precise time, a little bit of music here and there?
I like my music, bizarrely. And I don't know, I suddenly had my Spotify playlist come through. And I was thinking it would be Dua Lipa most of this year, because I know somebody did comment. I did mention Dua Lipa a couple of times in Love in Lockdown, and I do really like
She's had a lot of big tracks out this year.
Her tracks have been brilliant, and it really helped actually listening to Physical and Hallucinate and a couple of the others, because for me they're real songs of this year, so it helped me get into the mood of the Love in the Lockdown book. But yeah, bizarrely, I found I listened to a lot of Christine and the Queens, and they sing in French, so I don't really know what's going on there. That wasn't so much for Love in Lockdown this year, but for my first book, Jane Austen Dating Agency, I don't know why, I listened to a lot of them and a lot of London Grammar, which is a bit strange. Don't ask me why, but maybe it just gets me in the mood because that's what I was listening to and it's quite mellow. But sometimes if I'm having a bad day or things have been stressful, I have to have silence to write.
It's also a book of its time, isn't it? It's a book that is about being in lockdown this year. So it makes sense,
yeah,
it makes
I felt
sense that the music that, would yeah. cover that.
Also Blinding Lights, that's another brilliant one of this year, and it just really, and also I had to really work very hard with Love in Lockdown to try and keep it upbeat, because it's but with a very delicate balance, because it's hard with the pandemic as a background, isn't it, because it's such a serious issue. But also, you know, the brief was to make it positive. Obviously we don't want to depress everyone any more than they're already depressed this year, so listening to upbeat music sort of helped a bit, you know, in the more cheerful chapters.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
We'll be back with more from Chloe James in just a sec. Now we've got a brand new tier over on our Patreon page, patreon.com/writersroutine. So if you want to support the show and have a top author answer the questions that you want to ask them, I can make that happen. Sign up to the Patreon. The idea is that every 3 months or so, I will do a special bonus episode just for that tier, where you can send me the questions that I will ask the authors that I chat to, and that will be the only way that you can hear it. So that's what you need to do. Sign up to the new tier. You can also get merch that way through Patreon, and there is even a way for you to get your book to sponsor an episode of the show. I will give it a big plug. I will dedicate the whole episode to it, which maybe lockdown deprived you of getting the word out there. I can help that happen. You just need to sign up to support the show with a little bit every month, just to help us keep ticking over at patreon.com/writersroutine. Let's get back to it with Chloe James then. Chloe James, also Fiona Woodyfield, talking about her new novel, Love in Lockdown. In this part, we chat about what she did when she was first asked about maybe taking on the project. Also, you can hear about the writing joy in a bleak time for everyone. And we pick things up talking about that pseudonym, because this new one, Love in Lockdown, it's her debut as Chloe James, but it comes not long after her debut as Fiona Woodyfield, her actual name, when she brought out the Jane Austen dating agency not so long ago.
Yes, it was my debut, and I've just this minute signed for the sequel, which is coming out next August, which is nearly finished. So really excited about that. I did have quite a few requests for another book, so I'm really thrilled. It's just so lovely as a writer to have people enjoy your work and say, oh, we can't wait to find out what happens to the characters. So I'm super excited about that.
So that happens, and then a few months later, you release another debut under a different name. That seems quite a short time to go to a pseudonym. What was the thinking behind that?
Well, it wasn't particularly my thinking. I have to say it was it's Avon who contacted me about writing the book, actually, and it was their request to use a pseudonym. And at first, I have to be honest, I was a little bit sort of unsure, because I was like, well, I want this under my name. But then when I thought about it, actually, what they were doing makes sense, because it's a different style and it's a slightly more modern theme to the book, and I like the name. They were happy for me to not be anonymous, that's the word, because I did want to link my real name in. And actually, I hope that I might be able to continue writing under Chloe James and just change it up a bit. So it wasn't my request, as I say, but I always thought that I would like to probably write under different names, perhaps if I write different genres, because in the future I wouldn't mind writing, certainly for children, if I could, and potentially historical. And I understand from speaking to various writers that it often works better for the audience if you write under a different name, if it's a different genre of book.
So this sounds like the story came about in a slightly more unusual way than many other authors who have an idea, pitch it and publish it. Whereas...
Oh, it was totally different, yes, because I actually got contacted by Avon because their team had the idea from the Greg James show, you know, where the couple isolated together, they'd just met, and it gave them the idea, and they wanted a writer who was quite positive and upbeat to take on the story idea. So it was very much their plan and their plot. But I was really keen to give it my own stamp because it was very much an outline. And I was really glad to have that freedom, because I think as a writer, it would be very constraining to have to write someone else's story completely, if you see what I mean. I have to be honest, I was a little bit worried at first, because when I first looked at discussions online and things about whether you would write about lockdown, I felt I wouldn't. Actually, I felt, you know, I Jane Austen dating agency is so different. It's so escapist. It's, you know, there's nothing worse happens in that than, you know, she upsets Darcy, and, you know, it's lovely escapism. You know, she might snap her shoe. Actually, it was real bliss coming back to writing the sequel after the lockdown. It was nice to have some escapism. But I'm really glad I did it, because I feel that people do need something that's relevant and current, and still puts a bit of positivity into it, because I feel like this is such an unprecedented thing that's happened this year. And I think we've all struggled, haven't we? You know, it's a real, I still think it's a bit of a shocker. You know, if somebody had told us this time last year, we'd all be in the middle of a pandemic this year. I think we'd have all sort of not laughed, but would have scoffed, wouldn't we? Probably.
What were you presented with then? You said you had an outline that you wanted to put your own stamp. So what was a...
Yeah, I was given a plot outline, and then... So it was the outline that two people, you are given the names, two people are, you know, met, well, they don't meet, but they live one above the other. And it's the idea of them falling in love without meeting. But I wasn't given the condition that Jack had. I had to give him some condition so that he had to be isolated, because they came up with the idea that he should be isolated, and because that makes it more interesting, doesn't it? But I was allowed to choose what health condition I gave him. And I gave him kidney disease, because my daughter has kidney disease. So it's best to write what you know, really. And then it was my choice. Sophia needed to have something that she was trying to get over, a breakup. But again, I was able to bring my own ideas to the party. And that's the joy of it, that I could take it on and make it my own. And I gave Sophia epilepsy out of the blue, because this is what happened to my daughter when she was 14. And I think it's really useful for people to see what it's like for someone to suddenly, you know, to go from having had a completely normal life to suddenly having a condition. So I really enjoyed being able to put my own stamp on it. And then I was given the idea that there would be other people in the flat, but I was allowed again to make their story my own. And one of the stories just completely just ran away with me, really. I don't know why. It just, you know, sometimes characters come along and you think as a writer that you've got control of the story, but sometimes you don't. And these people demand to be written in, which sounds a bit weird, but I guess other authors might find the same, that you don't plan it in the plot, but suddenly someone comes along and they insist on being heard and part of the story. But it kind of works.
So describe to me more about that then. At what moment when you're writing and do you start to notice that, hang about, this character might have a lot more to say than I had originally planned?
Well, with me, I find it happens as I'm going along. And it was literally halfway through the book. And it's this old guy, Bertie, who's an old... And funnily enough, he was inspired by an old chap who walks down my road. And he always looks like he's got the cares of the world on his shoulders. You know what I mean? And I just started thinking about how lonely it was for people this year on their own, you know, in lockdown, able to go out for their short bit of exercise, but then back in the four walls. And I wanted him to be on his own because I thought if he had lost his wife perhaps the year before, and I thought that would make it even, you know, there are people like that, and I thought that would make it even more difficult. But then suddenly he went from that to this whole subplot about, which I won't spoil in case anybody hasn't read the book, but suddenly, yeah, it was about halfway through to three quarters of the way through the book, suddenly this idea came to me and I thought, I've got to put it in. There's going to be a bit of a twist here. And funnily enough, my editor didn't know about it, and I didn't run it past her. I didn't really have the courage to. And when I gave it in, I literally, my heart was in my mouth for about 2 weeks while she read it. And then she came back and she said, I loved that bit. And I was like, oh, thank goodness. Because you sort of put it, you know, you do take a punt when you're writing. It's such a leap of faith, isn't it? You know, you write this book, even when you're sort of guided with the characters like this, it's still... That kind of made it worse in a way for me, because I thought they've obviously envisioned this outline and these characters, and what if my vision isn't like theirs? You know, what if they read it and they think, no, that wasn't how I imagined them? But thank goodness my editor said, no, that's it. He really brought them to life exactly how I wanted, and I was so relieved. But that is a pressure. I had to do a sample for them to see first, so I literally had about 5 days. So I just started writing. Before I started writing, funnily enough, I got big foolscap pieces of paper and I just started writing, you know, just the outline, just names and where they were. And I started thinking, where is this going to be? Is it, you know, they're in flats? Is it in a specific city? And I really struggled with that as well, because at first they suggested maybe Sheffield. And I thought, but I don't really know that much, because I think you should write about where you know. And then I thought, I'd rather make this universal. We're going to make this a city. It could be a city anywhere, because, you know, obviously it's sold throughout the world. So I wanted it, you know, to be universal in its appeal. But what I first of all did, and I don't know about other authors, but I just completely tried to get myself into the heads of the characters, because I think especially Jack and Sophia, and I had to write a prologue. So I just started writing it. But I just wanted to think about, because they had to have a chance meeting, and I thought, where could this be? What could he be doing? And that scene had to come in my head. And to be honest, before I got that scene, I actually thought, can I write this book? You know, because you've really got to engage with the characters. I think you've got to think about that emotional conflict. I went on a course about emotional conflict, and it by a brilliant lecturer. And it's so true. You've got to care about the character. You've got to engage with them. Otherwise, I don't think you can write about their story, can you, really? And otherwise you're not going to have readers who care about what happens to them. So initially it was just getting that down on paper, that first scene, even though it's a bit random because I didn't know what I was going to do with the rest. It was just seeing if I could write this book. And once I'd engaged with them, I thought, yeah, I know these people. I can write this and it's going to be okay.
Now, the genre that you're writing in isn't one that needs to be full of you know, twists and turns and different, and
it's not really, no. Although I like to add them.
yeah, of course. Now, I would imagine, I mean, on the face of it, writing a book called Love in Lockdown, with two people stuck in a flat who are unable to meet, it seems quite limiting plot-wise. How do you go about making it a page-turner within the genre
I think yeah, I think that was difficult and that was a real challenge. And I have had a couple of, you know, you do, I always read my critical reviews as well. And one person did put, you know, rather a lot of, you know, telling rather than showing, but it was really hard. But within that, I wanted to make it a little bit limited because I want, especially in, there's a second chapter where you've got Jack on his own and he's literally down to his last piece of toast. You know, and I don't know if you found that during lockdown, but initially we found we, you know, we did end up eating things that, you know, have been in our cupboard probably since 1923. Not quite that long, but you know what I mean. And I really wanted to make it feel a bit claustrophobic and a bit, you know, because he's shut in. And it was limiting. And you know, that was some of the feedback from a couple of people. Yet other people said, you know, that encapsulated perfectly how it was. Because I wanted, rather than make it a page turner initially, I wanted to engage people in the plight of this guy. You know, he's a young, fairly fit, he has been ill, active guy. He's a bartender. He goes out. He's got mates. He's got a great life. He's having a great time. And then suddenly he's in on his own. And it's just, I wanted to make it a bit static. Do you see what I mean? Before then, I did, as you say, I did have to try and keep the plot going. But I made it a slow burn so that, you know, there wasn't much going on, but then he was looking forward to speaking to Sophia again. So that gave the reader that feeling that actually he's not got a lot going on, but oh, but he's going to speak to Sophia later. I wonder what she'll say. I wonder how this is going to develop. How can it develop? Because it's a bit limiting, isn't it? But then as it snowballed and they started talking about other things and they started involving the community, I used the community and the fact that Sophia was a key worker to have outside scenes. Otherwise, it really would have been too static. you know, you wouldn't really want to be within the four walls throughout the whole book. It would be pretty boring, a bit like lockdown. And then that's where the other plots came. And again, a lot of it did have to be dialogue. And that's where you've got a lot of telling, not showing in the book, because by the very nature, people were having to communicate on the phone during lockdown because you haven't got that. You can't show that body language. So it was difficult to write from that point of view. And I think it did make it limiting, but I hope I've succeeded and that it's made people, and I hope it will make people remember in years to come or people learn about it who won't have been around now. You know, potentially it's a historical text in a way, isn't it? I hope, you know, how limiting it was. And because I think people will struggle looking back to think, oh, did people really stay in? You know, it's just quite a difficult thing to get your head around, isn't it? In this day and age.
Yeah, if you're writing quite a claustrophobic and perhaps limiting atmosphere in some of these, because we are stuck indoors, how are you doing that with tricks and with words on the page and writing style?
Well, I tried to keep the writing style a little bit light because that's the difficulty. That was the biggest difficulty in the whole book. And I am quite a positive person, but you know, we've all been very upset by what's happened this year. It's a very serious subject. So it was difficult, but I found I tried to make the style of writing a little bit light, and I tried to pop in little bits of humour to try and lighten it. You know, for example, with Jack, you know, the fact that he managed to burn his last piece of toast, because it's the sort of thing that happens, isn't it? The fact that he decides to watch on YouTube to try and cut his hair. I mean, I don't know about you, but I actually did watch YouTube to see how to cut my hair and my children's. And actually the dog didn't survive unscathed. The poor dog had the most embarrassing lockdown haircut I've ever seen. But it did bring a bit of humour to the book, the scene where Jack cuts his hair and then his brother FaceTimes him and he's like, my God, what, because the razor actually runs out partway through. So it's about trying to make a bit of humour amongst the rest of it. And again, you know, make something out of the small things. It's because I do think it's the small, shiny things that matter in life and in writing. And I think it's those universal moments within the writing, you know, those, oh, you want the reader to go, oh, yes, I felt like that, or that happened to me. Do you know what I mean? And I felt it was important to keep those in the book, just to try and not just lighten it, but also to sort of bring a universality of experience and try to make people feel less isolated by this year.
Now, you said earlier on that you've never written a book so quickly, you've never had to get words down so purposefully. How is that as a writer to be bringing out a book that is so timely that, you know, you almost want to be the first one to do it because it's an idea that someone else might pick up and then do, and you need to get in there first. How is that when you're writing a story that has to, by its nature, feel quite forced at times to get the words down?
Yeah, it was pressured. I think I kept convincing myself that it was okay and I had plenty of time. But I did sit down at the beginning, and unusually for me, I really planned it methodically. I looked at what parts of the book, because I had the whole plot outlined, and I thought, right, I want to write this in 2 months, really. So I've got this amount of weeks, I've got 8 weeks. I'm going to get half done by after the first month to 5 weeks. I want the first half in. And I actually asked my editor if I could send her the first half for her to just run an eye over, because I thought it's a real, you know, I really couldn't pull it back if I sent her the whole thing, and she hated it within the time limit. So I thought, let's, and she was very happy to do that because I wanted to make sure I was on the right track and get any feedback. But definitely, I think if you've got to write that quickly, you've got to plan. And it just for your own sanity to feel that you're getting there. You know, I felt like by halfway through, I felt really buoyed by it, actually. I thought, I can do this. Because until then, you're not sure you can. But I was on target. I'd got the first half done. And it was just sitting down every day and writing words, which is not normally how I would write. But you just got to. You know, even if they're not good, and you go back the next day and say, actually, they were awful, I'm going to, you know, delete. What I do is I keep another document. You know, I expect a lot of writers to do this, where I have another Word document, and it will, you know, just say bits from Love in Lockdown, and I've still got it, where I just cut and paste, pop them on there, think maybe I'll use them again, maybe they'll do for another bit of the book.
Did you know, right, day one, this is what I need to do, this is how many words I need to get down, this is what part I'm going to do? How did that work?
Well, I did know the entire plot and what was going to happen, so I knew that by halfway certain things needed to have happened. I did look at so many words. I mean, I wasn't actually really given a word count, but I normally guess we aim for about 80,000 words for a book of this genre. I must admit, I'm terrible. I tend to write too many words. You'd never guess by how much I talk, but I am a wordy person. and I mean, with Jane Austen Dating Agency, I'm not going to lie, when it went into submission to agents, it was 104,000 words, which is far too long. And that was part of the process to have to cut it down. I've got a lot better. Love in Lockdown is actually the third book I've written. My second one I wrote last year is sort of on a back burner. I've put it to one side for a bit. But I think you get better at being more able to use your words more carefully and to write to the word count. But certainly I did do a rough word count each week, because I needed to get to about 40,000 words by the end of the first month to 5 weeks. And I was strict about it, not for each day, but I thought I had it vaguely in the back of my mind that I needed to write so many words each day, really, and shut myself in my room till I'd done it. Even if I went out for, you know, if I had a block or something, I tend to not sit at the desk if I feel like that. I will go and get the dog and go for a walk, or I'll walk around the garden, go and eat a lot of chocolate or something. I'm not a great believer in sitting at the desk with a blank page. For me, that would be too pressured. I like to go and distract myself for a bit and think about other things, and then I find it tends to ease and I can come back and write again.
And that is it for this week's Writer's Routine. Thank you so much to Chloe and Fiona. You can grab a copy of the book Love in Lockdown using the link in the episode notes and over at writersroutine.com. Next week, we're chatting to Abigail Mann, an author who was shortlisted for the Comedy Women in Print Prize. She'll be on telling us about her new novel, The Sister Surprise. In the meantime, give us a follow on Twitter if you can, @WritersPod. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. Make sure you are subscribed. And if you can spare anything a month just to help this show, to help us carry on bringing you chats with the biggest authors around, patreon.com/writersroutine is where you need to go. And I will see you next week with Abigail Mann on Writers Routine. Bye.